Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's a game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Yes, indeedy. Welcome into another Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Coming to you here from the Frat House Sports Radio Studios. Frat House Mike, with you. And for the next hour and a half or so, we're going to take a look at the week that was. Just listening to that intro there, tearing ourselves apart for every inch. Well, listen, if you look around the league, and from the sound of it, there might be the inside of some locker rooms that are ripping themselves apart. We've got a couple of teams that appear to be on the brink of potential implosion. Oh, we'll talk a little bit about some of those. I have a funny feeling we're going to get into it tomorrow night as well on our Frat House Sports Show. Yes, we are coming to you here on a Tuesday evening. Please make a mental note of that or write it down someplace. And if you're a regular listener of this program, Tuesday nights will be the time that we come to you from this point forward throughout the rest of the NFL season. And yes, tomorrow night we will be coming with our Frat House Sports Show. Now, that's just for that one week only because, of course, of the Thanksgiving holiday. And here we sit looking at week 12 coming up on us and Turkey Day football. And what a tremendous, I mean, you know, that is just so Americana. You know, the whole Thanksgiving feast, but then throw in there that triple serving of football games, that is just, you can't ask for a much better day than that. You know, sure, we're getting football every Thursday now. We get it in the evenings. But on Thanksgiving Day, you get football starting at 12:30 in the afternoon. Well, that is if you're really dying to watch the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Lions. But anyhow, nonetheless, we're all going to be tuning in. You know, and then we get our Dallas game coming in right after the fact, and then I think it's a Green Bay game then later in the evening. So, you know, a full day of NFL football, and it is it's nice. What a tremendous way to look at the holiday. But it made me start to think about a couple of things as I look around this league that is just putrid with the mediocrity. 72% of the teams in the entire league right now are 5-5 or less. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to keep coming back to it, folks. You can bet that. I'm just going to keep coming back to it for the remainder of the season. What in the world are you truly thankful for in the NFL? What are you thankful for? Listen, aside from the folks who happen to be perhaps maybe Carolina Panthers fans or New England Patriots fans, of course, even for New England fans, isn't it getting a bit old by now? Hey, how about Cincinnati Bengals fans? It's not old for them. You know, who else out there is thankful? Think about it. Minnesota Vikings fans, I guess you're very thankful. But how about Atlanta Falcons fans? Are you thankful? That team started off gangbusters this season. And boy, they have just kind of all of a sudden just faded into the background now, haven't they? How about those Seattle Seahawks fans? Are they thankful? A 5-5 team sitting there? Are you thankful? Chicago Bears fans? Hey, some Chicago Bears fans might be thankful. They're sitting there going, hey, we're 4-6 and better than we thought we would be. I don't know. It just was something that I was thinking about this afternoon as we're approaching this Thanksgiving Turkey Day football day. What in the world are the vast majority of us with so many teams at such a mediocre ebb? What in the world are we truly thankful for when it comes to the NFL football? And God knows, we here at Frat House Sports, we sit and watch all of it every Sunday, regardless of how mediocre it might be. Those are going to become just a couple of the topics, and of course then we'll also get into taking a look at a number of games that we want to break down and take a look at. Oh boy, there's plenty of storylines going on right now in the NFL as well, including Johnny Football. This kid just isn't going to learn, is he? We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to break a couple of games down, as I pointed out. Denver Broncos, it certainly appears that the new era of the Denver Broncos may be starting to get geared up now, as we saw a pretty impressive performance from Brock Osweiler the other day. If any of you want to jump in on anything we have to talk about here this evening, don't hesitate. I'd love to hear from anybody that would like to let me know what they're thankful for when it comes to the NFL. I'd be happy to take your call. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us, cell phone or landline. 347-826-9964. If you are listening on a computer and Skype capable, hit the Skype button. Should put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, you can jump in the chat room and leave us a message there at Blog Talk Radio, or you can hit me up on Twitter here at Frat House Mike. I check my Twitter account constantly, at Frat House Mike. Joining me as always, got to get Brandon in here. Brandon, I guess you're thankful for the New England Patriots, right?
I am, but I'm not going to say I'm not a bit worried right now. Brady keeps finding ways to win, but we keep losing receivers left and right, and I'm not liking it right now. I mean, right now we're down Amendola for a couple weeks with a sprained knee, and Julian Edelman's out with a broken foot for what sounds like a 6-week injury. Buffel came into the year hurt, you know, and is playing okay. Dobson went down yesterday for the second time this year. He was already hobbled going into yesterday and went out of that game. So the cupboard's getting pretty bare at wide receiver, I will say that. But, you know, the Patriots always seem to find a way.
Yep.
And, you know, I have faith in my quarterback and my coach, but I don't know that we have enough to go undefeated, especially up against the number one defense, or one of the best defenses. I don't know if they're still statistically number one, but the Broncos are one of the best defenses in the league this coming Sunday. And with that many weapons down, I'm not liking the odds. Let's put it that way.
And where is that game? That game is in Denver.
It's in Denver. Yep.
Yeah, I believe that's in Denver, right? Yep.
And if it wouldn't be for the Rams picking up Wes Welker, I bet Belichick would be calling him right now.
I think that would be a mistake. I still think I think Belichick can probably still do better out there. You know, go beat the bushes a little bit. You know, we're talking about wide receiver here. We're not talking about a running back. Running backs are a little more difficult to beat the bushes for. You watch. I'm telling you. You know, I was bringing it up to you, a pre-show here a little bit. He's going to find somebody that nobody's ever heard of. And watch, last week of fantasy, everybody's going to be scrambling to get that guy and put him on their team. Watch. You wait and see. Honest to God.
yeah, you're probably right. But, if Amendola wouldn't have got hurt, I'd feel okay about the game, because he kind of he was reminding me an awful lot of Edelman in that game. He was basically playing all the plays, you know, all the kind of catches, you know, the, you know, 5-6 yard over the middle and then run after the catch. And he was doing pretty admirably till he tweaked his knee, but, you know, luckily it's just a sprain, nothing season ending or anything, but nonetheless, you still got to, you know, it sounds like he's going to at least miss a week or two.
You're right. He did. The one observation I was going to make to you during last night's game as we were sitting here watching it was that I appreciate your comparison of Amendola to Edelman. Although, correct me if I'm wrong, Edelman seems to be a bit more natural about it or a little more fluid. He doesn't seem, in other words, it doesn't look like he has to work as hard. I guess that's the point I was trying to make. Amendola looks like he has to work a little bit harder to make those plays that Edelman seems to be able to make almost naturally.
I think you're probably right, but I think Edelman's just a hair quicker than Amendola. And when I mean quicker, I mean, you know, like, you know, the little sneaky, you know, getting open kind of thing. Not necessarily, you know, just sprinting down the field. I'm talking about, you know, getting open and eluding the first and second guy. But Amendola, he certainly made a great showing of himself last night. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I mean, he was the guy till he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, LaFell made a couple catches, but, you know, for the most part, it was Danny Amendola when it was wide receiver. So it seemed like Buffalo was smart and took Gronkowski out of the game the best they could. He was kind of a non-factor for most of the game. You know, the running game, you know, Blunt did okay. James White looked pretty good a couple times. I think he scored a couple touchdowns, maybe out of the, you know, catching out of the backfield. First time in, you know, I can remember that he actually had that kind of game. So, you know, we'll see how it is. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll be, you know, rooting for him on Sunday night against Denver, but I'm not liking the chances. There was times against Buffalo that, you know, Brady was out of weapons. You could see it. Like, he just had nowhere to go.
Since we're talking about that game, let's do this. Let's break that one down a little bit since we got talking
okay.
about it. I mean, we might as well jump into it because we practically almost given away a lot of the stats anyhow. Amendola was, in fact, the leading receiver for the New England Patriots last night. 9 receptions, 117 yards before he went out. Averaging 13 yards a reception. Not too shabby at all. Brandon LaFell picked it up there after the fact. 16 yard average for LaFell, 4 receptions, 66 yards. Brandon, one of the observations, though, I made last night, what in the world? Tom Brady looked, I don't know, he was underthrowing, it seemed like, a lot through that game. 20 of 39, he was just a bit better than 50% completion. Now, mind you, all right, he still had the yardage, 277 yards. He had the touchdown. He did have one pick. But he just didn't look terribly sharp, did he? Now, was that as a result? Now, mind you, listen, Rex Ryan was bringing it. I mean, he brought that defense to play last night. They were showing him a number of different schemes coming up at him. They were blitzing the hell out of him, particularly in the first quarter. They seemed to lay off of it a little bit in the second quarter, came back at the blitz game a little bit more in the second half then. But so, I mean, yeah, the defense was keeping a good eye on him, but he was underthrowing. He was underthrowing a lot of his receivers.
Well, yeah, I would say that, but how about let me put a different slant on it. And this is where you need to see the coach's film to see, you know, what the situation was in some of those. As you said, he was under an extreme pass rush. We also pointed out he was down a couple men in the lineup for weapons. Is it possible that the guys who were there just weren't getting open, and he was just, you know, he knew he had to unload the ball because of the pass rush, but he didn't want to put the ball, you know, he didn't want to float it up there and, you know, get interception. So I'll just throw it at the feet. So I'm throwing it in the area of a receiver, not getting flagged for intentional grounding.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, when he needed to, it seemed like he could be accurate. I mean, he had made a few, you know, pretty awesome
sure.
plays. That one play that they blew dead on him. I mean, I haven't seen Brady, you know, elude that many pass rushers, you know, move almost all the way to the sideline and turn, you know,
threw it across his
chicken,
body.
You know what, into chicken salad by, you know, would have been a touchdown more or less to Amendola, but it, if it wasn't for an inadvertent whistle.
Yep, and he threw that one, again, as I've just pointed out, he was kind of almost throwing that one across his body because, as you were saying, he was going to the right side, to his right side of the field, but the receiver was down the sideline and in a little more to the center. So he had to throw it across his body. So I give you credit there. You're right. But boy, it did come to my mind last night as well as I'm watching that one and I'm seeing the short passes. Yeah, maybe some of it was on purpose. That is, he recognized that the player was not in position, or they weren't perhaps maybe running the right route, which is another question I would throw at you. Is that possible? That some of these receivers weren't exactly on the same page because, well, hey, as you just pointed out, I mean, you had Harper in there who they had just brought up off the practice squad, and LaFell's just coming back. So maybe these guys aren't exactly in sync just yet. They're not used to carrying the load as much. So,
oh, and don't forget, Deion Lewis went down a couple weeks ago to a season-ending ACL, and he was, you know, catching 8-9 balls out of the backfield every game. So
he was underthrowing Gronk, though. I mean, that was a little surprising.
Well, I think Gronk, he may have not been as open, although usually he will trust Gronk to go up for it. But, you know, maybe it was just situational, you know, like I said. Pass rush combination and not liking the look with where the receiver is in relation to the defender, you know, and just bailing on a play. You know, I don't know. It's hard to say. There was quite a few, I was a fan last night. It was driving me nuts, but yet they were still doing, you know, enough to win. I never really got the feeling they were going to lose last night. You know what I mean? It just wasn't going as well as normal. You know what I mean? So I guess that's a good thing, I guess, when you're worried about your team, you know, not doing as well as normal kind of thing.
Well, let's see.
I never had the feeling they were going to lose that game.
Yeah, it was 10-3 at the half. And I didn't think they were going to lose. But I think, you know, both of us realized fairly early on this game was not going to be the high-scoring affair that everybody thought it was going to be.
No.
That was number one. Number two, I thought to myself, boy, Buffalo is really bringing the defense. I'm looking at it, I'm watching it, I'm thinking, whoa, boy, this could get really, really interesting. Particularly if Buffalo had been able to say, you know, not only intercept, but then run one back, you know, then things could get really, really interesting. Now, over on Buffalo's side, now, of course, Buffalo, as we're pointing out, New England won this game by 7 points. On some lines, I think that was a push all the way around, because I think the spread was 7. And in one pool I was involved in, New England was favored by 7.5. So they won by 7, so, you know, they really didn't. They didn't fully cover the line, as I point out. It was a push on it, but Buffalo drops to 5-5. New England goes up to 10-0. Tyrod Taylor last night, 20 of 36, 33 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. LeSean McCoy had 82 yards on 20 carries. He looked very, very good. McCoy did. I thought McCoy looked about the best I've seen him in almost any game we've seen of Buffalo so far this year.
But I think he had an injury. He was fighting through for most of the beginning, so maybe he's finally just getting healthy.
I think he had a hamstring, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it was a hamstring.
It was something with his leg, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he looked, in my opinion, he looked about the best that we had seen him. But I'll tell you, that Buffalo defense, we had a little bit of everything in last night's game, starting it out with, I guess that was in the first possession by the New England Patriots, where Tom Brady called an audible. He called a Rex Ryan audible. I wish I had the audio of that. Perhaps maybe I'll have that for tomorrow night's 4 minutes of football. But that was stinking awesome. I thought that was absolutely hysterical. In true Peyton Manning form, Brady comes up to the line. He's in the shotgun and he's audibilizing. And one of the calls that he makes is he yells out quite loud for everyone on TV and probably at a good portion of the stadium to hear. Certainly, the Buffalo sideline. I got to hear him yell out, "Rex Ryan." Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Have you read anything? Was there any comment from Ryan himself or anybody with regard to that? I've not read anything about it.
I've read comments from everybody. The only one that I was kind of hoping to read was Belichick. They didn't ask him. They did ask Brady, and Brady says, yeah, we have a lot of exotic audible calls. You know, he didn't really make an issue of the fact that he, you know, called Ryan's name, and Ryan did comment. He says, yeah, well, that's because he likes me and I like him. And I called his name Brady all game. So
I bet he did. You know, I think we saw a couple
probably
of things.
An expletive in front of it, probably.
Absolutely.
However, but,
I think we saw a few
times
of those.
There was nothing bad. It was all good natured, and Brady wasn't giving up what the play meant or what the audible meant, but I would imagine you won't hear it no more because it made so much, got so much publicity, whatever the play is, you know, all the opposing team will know now because they'll see it on tape. So whatever that change was, it'll be different next time.
There's no doubt about it. It was done specifically for that game.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about
I have
that.
No doubt.
And
there's always
was,
some gamesmanship when you have.
Absolutely.
Bill Belichick and Tom Brady know how to get in their opponents' heads. Rex Ryan, as you said, you know, they rent space in his head. You know, they live there rent free. And we know for a fact Belichick and Brady can get in Peyton Manning's head. When Peyton was still, you know, on top, you know, he couldn't beat them to save his life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always some form of gamesmanship in any NFL game, but those two are really good at it. That's part of the game, you know. And last night they were playing wounded. You could tell their offense is not clicking like it was, you know, week seven when they had everybody, when they had Deion Lewis, when they had, you know, Amendola, they had Edelman, they had, you know, a full complement, you know. So hopefully, obviously Amendola will get healthier quicker. Hopefully Edelman will be back for the playoffs, which is what it's looking like. Deion Lewis is done for the year, so we're not seeing him. Hopefully they can, you know, change the game plan enough and get LeGarrette Blount some more carries and maybe mix that James White in a little bit because he seemed sort of effective last night. I have to give the guy some props because I was ready to see him leave because he's been on this team for like 3 years and never really done anything till last night where he scored 2 touchdowns. So let's see if we can, you know, improve on that till next season when hopefully I hope Deion Lewis can come back. And the guy just seems to have nothing but injury trouble no matter where he goes. And he started the year off so strong.
Yep.
And, you know, it was a great story. And, you know, it's not, you know, an ACL when you had that kind of start. But hopefully he'll come back.
The other thing, though, that I did read a little bit about today, and there were numerous analyses and articles up about it. I didn't get a chance to read all of them. But one of the things that was out there about last night's game, the officiating. And some of the problems that were encountered with this officiating crew. And, you know, Brandon, that's an experienced crew that's out there. That's a Super Bowl crew. They have actually, this particular crew, that head referee, and many of the members of that particular crew have actually officiated on Super Bowls. Not what one would have expected. The most bizarre play of them all was the whistle that got blown. As you pointed out, on the pass to, who was it to?
It ended up being to Edelman, or Amendola, rather.
Amendola.
You know, it was a blown play. It was like a schoolyard kind of play at that point. But Amendola got the ball and had clear field in front of him without that whistle. I actually have a little bit about that if you
yeah,
I don't
ahead.
Know if you were going there or not. apparently this referee, it was his first game back earlier this season, I'm guessing it had to be week one, got absolutely annihilated as a line judge on a play, had a couple of cracked ribs and a broken collarbone. So he's a little, maybe a little twitchy with the whistle, being his first game back after, you know, getting annihilated week one by, you know, being on the sideline as a, you know, line judge. So maybe that helps, you know, explain it a little. And I guess the other fluky call that I heard was, I guess, at the very end of the game.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I don't think I made it. I wasn't awake enough for it. But Sammy Watkins apparently gave himself up and then rolled out of bounds. The referee said, well, he gave himself up. That's, you know, that's it. Roll the clock. And that's the end of the game. And they said he just came from college. And that's the rule in college. In the pros, they should have not done that. He should have been out of bounds. So they had two more or less major problems, I guess, with the officiating. And those are the excuses the NFL or whoever rolled out there today. I'll give the guy, you know, who's just back from an injury a little bit of slack because Rex Ryan was in a position he shouldn't have been in that white area. And I could see if he's worried about the play rolling to him and you got Rex Ryan in your face and you can't see what's going on, I'll give him a pass. As a fan, obviously, it's very frustrating because, you know, you could see what the result of that play was going to be. I mean, at the very least, they were going to be, you know, inside the 20 ready to roll, if not, you know, a touchdown. So, you know, that part's a little frustrating. But at the same time, given him being his first game back and he already got injured on a sideline, similar sideline play earlier this year, you know, you got Rex Ryan in your face, you know, all right, I'll give you a pass for that.
Well,
just
as soon as that play, as soon as that play took place, I mean, I'm watching it and I hear the whistle and I immediately yelled, what in the world is the whistle for?
Did.
What in the world? Yeah. What is that whistle for? You know, and in my mind, I don't care what anybody says. Rex Ryan interfered with that umpire on
ball. Well, and he did get called. He got called for 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct. The way it ended up is the Patriots got the ball where Amendola caught it, which, you know, was okay, and then they tacked a 15 on after that, and it put him at the 40 of the Bills. Now, the drive stalled after that, but at least they, you know, I believe that was the drive where Gostkowski lost his 30-in-a-row streak and missed a 54-yard field goal. But, you know, I think overall when it's all said and done, considering how bad it could have been, I guess the refs knew they screwed up and they were trying to fix it. And that was their compromise, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't really give them what they should have given them, but they gave them the – because technically the way the rules go, it should have been where – it shouldn't have counted that way because the whistle actually blew before – Amendola made the catch. They showed the replay. And that's, you know, so I think the refs kind of,
they
you
were
know, fudged it the best they could.
In other words,
they knew they screwed up and they had to try to fix it.
Yeah, all right, right. You do the bouncy football thing. You look like you
have. Right.
No, you look like you got a migraine, right? Your mic's
gone. Yeah, exactly. Yep, that's exactly kind of what we saw last night a couple times
exactly,
with this crew.
Yeah. Now, as far as the Watkins one goes, because it appeared to me that the clock should have stopped, I was actually a little bit surprised that Ryan, I guess that's not a challengeable thing at that time.
No.
At that time, right? There's no way.
Yeah, in the last 2 minutes, nobody can challenge anything.
Nobody can challenge, that's right.
It's all from the booth. And besides the fact that, you know, if they were probably already out of timeouts, if you don't have a timeout, you can't throw a challenge.
It would have only put, I think, about 4 seconds back on the clock.
Right. Well, and, you know, I guess they figured at that point, you know, I don't know. They could have fixed it. I mean, it was the last play of the game. I don't see why, you know, if another referee realizes the guy made a mistake, you know, just say the play's under review or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it's
right.
One they can't reverse. There are some things they cannot fix with instant replay no matter what. You know, that, and maybe that falls in that you know, that if it's, you know, a judgment call, you know, like I know some judge, they will not reverse some kind of some of the referee judgment calls because they don't want to question, you know, somebody's judgment while they're in the game. You know what I mean? In other
right.
words, the NFL will review it afterwards, and if they didn't like it, they'll let them know. But they're
they'll
not gonna.
Know.
Yeah, they don't want to do it during the game. I think is so maybe that's not a reviewable play. I don't know. I don't know how, you know, that all works out. But yeah, that was an experience with that ref crew last night.
Right.
I mean, how many times did we see them, you know, huddling up trying to figure out what to call? I mean, that was there were more than just these two that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to think. It was who was the head referee? It's Sarator. It was Gene Sarator.
Gene Sarator, yeah.
Yeah, I and this guy. I mean, listen, he's not a slacker. That he's a good one. I like Gene Sarator. You know, but they didn't have a very good game last night. They didn't have a very good game last night. But it was an entertaining game for sure. Like I said, we saw a little bit of everything, and it certainly had its moments of snickering, and a little bit of laughter and finger pointing and the whole bit. Rex Ryan was certainly something to behold last night. Particularly at halftime, right before halftime as he was going in. My God Almighty, dear Lord, the venom that was seizing through his clenched teeth was incredible. Absolutely incredible. You got to
and
love.
You know what? He had that whole break at halftime. He came out. He looked just as mad as he did when he went in.
I'm telling you, you got to love. You got to. I don't mind Rex. I really don't. I'm not a big fan of his brother, Rob. But, of course, I always loved Dad. I mean, I loved Buddy when he was here at Philly.
Right.
But Rex doesn't bother.
I think Rex is a better coach than Rob.
So do I.
When it comes right down to it.
So do I. And Rex has got a lot of that same kind of bravado and gusto that Dad had. And I don't mind it. To me, I think it's stinking amusing. I really do. I mean, I just love how the Patriots just have his number, and he honest to God, that man goes to bed every night thinking about the next time he's got to play the Patriots. I'm convinced of it. I'm convinced of it.
Well, you may be right, but now he's got to wait till next year because this was the second time for season. So,
but I'm telling you, he's already got it mapped out. He already has it. He's already thinking. If anybody out there wants to jump in with us, 347-826-9964, 347-826-9964, jump in and give us a holler. Let us know what's on your mind. Let us know how your team is doing. Give us your comments on, the game that that your team just played or the game that they'll be playing this weekend. Or you can jump in the chat room, leave us a message there, or hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get me there, at Frat House Mike. What was I gonna say here? Where do I want to go here? Let's do this because I got a poll question I wanna put out, and we kind of what I like to do is we'll blend in some games and. And we'll talk about some other current issues and what have you. One of the teams I made an allusion coming into the show here this evening, Brandon. Some teams it might appear are, you know, with all the mediocrity we've got going on around the league, it might appear that some teams are getting ready to implode. One of them, I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't frankly think we would see this. This year, one of those teams that's taken me kind of by surprise are the Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia Eagles appear to be about ready to absolutely implode upon themselves. There are now rumors as of today that Chip Kelly might not, in fact, be the head coach of this team much longer after the end of this season. That, in fact, he and the owner may, in fact, part ways. That's the way, in fact, Adam Schefter phrased it. And that, frankly, both sides might be fed up with each other. I had pointed out yesterday to you that things were very, very testy and very negative at Kelly's post, I guess next day press conference after their loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What was that? 30-some points. What was the final on that one? 45-17 on Sunday. Absolutely horrible display. The Eagles now dropped two games in a row that many thought that they would win. They dropped both of those games at home, losing to the Dolphins last week 20-19 and then 45-17 this past week to a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that everybody thought they would win. A lot of people thought that the Eagles would get on a roll, win three in a row with the Detroit Lions coming up on Thanksgiving Day. Now, many people are thinking the Eagles may, in fact, lose that game on Thursday afternoon, early Thursday afternoon. I might be inclined to go along with them. This whole team is an absolute mess at this point, Brandon. This has got to be laid, you would think, squarely at the feet. It appears at this point now has lost complete control of this team, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as you alluded to that game a little bit, you know, Detroit, no matter how good or bad, always seemed to show up on Thanksgiving Day. So, if I'm the Eagles, that team's in total disarray. You got players not showing up to media commitments. You got players criticizing the fans publicly. You got the coach and owner, you know, who, you know, there's all kind of rumors from credible NFL people that, you know, things aren't going real good right now. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell you on that. That game, which we may be picking tomorrow, if we are picking that game, well, you know, I'm probably leaning towards the Lions on that one. Mark Sanchez is not showing me anything. They're saying Bradford's not going to be ready. We already kind of alluded to some of the other, I guess you can say, dysfunction now going on. You know, you might have it pegged just right as an implosion is pending.
This is not something that you saw coming at the beginning of the season, I don't believe.
No. They look great in preseason. They were putting up massive points, and Bradford was the second coming, and, you know, he's going to be the quarterback of the future. And, you know, now we're at week 10, and, yeah, not quite.
So what in the – I mean – how did the wheels come off of this thing? Has this just been a situation where, you know, because a lot of analysts are putting the blame on this, as I pointed out, at Chip Kelly's feet, and saying it's been his own arrogance, you know, dismantling the team, breaking it down, destroying the chemistry that was there, wanting to rebuild this thing simply because he could. And so, therefore, going out and tinkering and bringing this one in and bringing that one in, and, of course, then trying to make it all gel together, and it's not gelling together, and not knowing the right times to run the type of offense that he wants to run, trying to run it even when he doesn't have the tools to be able to run it. See, personally, I don't think that Chip Kelly, I don't think his style is what is killing the team. In other words, I don't think his offensive scheme is what's killing this team. I think it's something deeper than that. I think he doesn't know at times when to run it. I think he doesn't know at times how to accomplish his scheme. But I think that the concept of running a tempo offense, the way that we've seen Sanchez can do it, the problem with Sanchez is he's erratic and inconsistent, and as you point out, he's a turnover machine. But Sanchez has been the closest one we've seen to be able to running the type of offensive scheme that Chip Kelly wants to run, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it could work.
Well, it was working last year with the other pieces. I think that's part of the issue, is you just hit on it. You know, he did too much tinkering. DeMarco Murray does not fit his scheme in the slightest, has no business being on this team. And, you know, Ryan Matthews actually has worked out better in Chip Kelly's, you know, scheme of you know, being a running back and Sproles, but they don't use them properly, as you pointed out. It's like they're stubborn and they're going to stick to DeMarco Murray no matter what. You know, he wants to prove he's the genius and can build whatever he wants to build, and I think that's the downfall right there. I just think he messed with the foundation of this team. You know, he got rid of Foles. He got rid of Jeremy Maclin. Well, he didn't get rid of Maclin. Maclin was a free agent, traded McCoy. You know, so you got all these different parts, and I'm not impressed with their receiving core in the slightest. I mean, yeah, they have some guys that Josh Huff looks okay occasionally. We never see the first round pick from last year on the field, hardly.
Nope.
Riley Cooper's gone. He's non-existent while he's out there. They never throw it to him. Zach Ertz and Celek are at tight end are about, you know, that him and Huff and even Jordan Matthews, you know, he'll make a good play once in a while, but he's not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't like the combination of players he has put together here and is rolling out as, you know, his guys, and they're not running his offense, at least not as well as they were last year.
The other thing that I guess annoys me and disturbs me watching it and watching the Eagles is the lack of what I consider to be the lack of imagination, the lack of I want to say complexity, but that's really probably not the right word either. Just mixing the plays up. I am so sick, sore, and tired of seeing the same plays that don't work. And they keep seemingly wanting to run the same plays that they know don't work. And there just seems to be a lack of imagination or creativity. It's almost as if they don't game plan for specific teams, Brandon. It's like, This is our game plan. We're going with our game plan. And I don't care what I don't care if you're the Detroit Lions or the New England Patriots. I'm running the same game plan at you. And you can't do that. I mean, for God's sake, you know, we've always been led to believe that one of Chip Kelly's mentors is Bill Belichick. Well, for God's sake, if he's a mentor, he didn't mentor him very well. Or Chip Kelly was sleeping while Bill Belichick was mentoring. Because he's not anything like Bill Belichick. That's at least the impression I get, is that he doesn't game plan to a specific team. He game plans to a week, not to a team.
No, I hear you.
It's very, very.
I agree.
It's very frustrating.
I think Chip Kelly needs to. I think he needs to, have his parting of the ways or whatever it's going to be called when the time comes, and go back to the college game. I think his game is better suited for the college level, not the pros. And you know, that's just he may struggle depending where he ends up. We were kind of having a little conversation about some of the potential landing spots and where he'd fit, where he wouldn't fit, that kind of thing. And, you know,
I think it's unfortunate because, as I pointed out starting this conversation, I don't think that Chip Kelly's concept of a tempo offense in the NFL is a bad thing. I think it worked. Or at least we have seen it work on occasion on some games. And I liked what I saw when it was successful. So
well, we've
I don't
seen
think
this. We've seen this kind of thing though before. You know, where you know, we've seen the Patriots or we've seen Peyton Manning or other teams run a hurry up at times in the game that, you know, you don't normally expect. And it does work. I think Chip Kelly's basic philosophy of doing it all the time is not going to work in the NFL because the players just all the time, all 60 minutes of every game, you know, for 16 games. I think it's just too much to ask. You know, I think it's just, you know, in college you have more players, you have an unlimited roster, and you play less games. So, you know, I could see it being more effective, and they're spread out more in college because – in the pros, it's every week except for the one bye you get throughout the year. And I think that's where Chip Kelly's disconnect with his scheme and idea is. I don't think it will work in the NFL. That's mm-hmm. just my opinion. Not every down every time of every game. You know, like we said, there's been teams, we've seen Green Bay do it from time to time. Aaron Rodgers can run a hurry-up offense as good as anybody. You know, and you know they just don't. I think that's the difference. You got to pick your spots with that kind of thing, and that's it. I think that's the long and short of why Chip Kelly ain't working out in the NFL.
Yeah, and I have sent out over on Twitter, you can find this at Frat House Mike, sent out our Frat House Sports' NFL Twitter poll question of the evening. Will the Eagles, Chip Kelly, be in the NFL in 2016, next year? Will Chip Kelly be in the NFL in 2016? According to Adam Schefter today, he apparently was a guest over on Sirius XM NFL Radio, indicated that indications are that Chip Kelly and the Eagles are both sick of each other. His words, they're sick of each other, and that Chip Kelly will, in fact, part ways with the Philadelphia Eagles come the end of this season. I think that there are plenty of fans who would be, probably wouldn't be terribly disappointed with that. The interesting thing I find about that, Brandon, and just and we'll move on to other things here. The thing that I find so interesting about that is in listening to Philadelphia Sports Talk Radio today, so many fans coming out and, you know, I want this guy gone and I can't stand it and I can't take this Philadelphia Eagles team anymore. These are the same folks that were all in a lather when Chip Kelly came here to Philadelphia to begin with. Thought it was the greatest thing in the world. We got our guy. This is great. I have never, ever, ever endorsed or been in favor of Chip Kelly right from the day that they let Andy Reid go. Never. I never wanted Chip Kelly here. I have tolerated it. I have put up with it. I have sat back. I have watched. There have been some things that I've enjoyed watching, some things I give him praise for. But for the most part, I've never been a fan of his, never wanted him here before. But I think it's so funny now to hear so many people. They want his head now. And they were the same people that, I'm telling you, I couldn't get over it. The majority of people in Philadelphia 3 years ago were so sold on Chip Kelly and now how it's turned. So if anybody wants to participate in our Twitter poll, you can catch that up over at Frat House Mike. It's getting some activity. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Right now, 50-50. 50% of the folks are saying, yes, he will be in the NFL. 50% are saying, no. Be the tiebreaker. Jump in there and give me your comment or let me know, will you?
Well, is that in the NFL, period? In other words,
correct. I said in the NFL.
If him and the Eagles part ways, are you thinking he might end up with another team? Is that the thinking?
I just phrased it as in the NFL. Could he be anywhere in the NFL? Right. So
okay.
Because
I think that's even less likely. I think he's more likely to be an Eagle than not if he's in the NFL. I don't think another owner is touching him with a 10-foot pole right now.
Then he would be in the NFL.
He would be
in the NFL. If he stays in
right. Right.
And the reason I phrased it that way was simply because of character space. You know, will he be in the NFL? Rather than will he be with the Eagles next year, I started running out of characters. So that's why I phrased it the way that I did. That's the question, folks.
Well,
will he be in the
quick
NFL?
Quick question.
Yeah.
Do you think any other NFL franchise touches Chip Kelly if the Eagles and him part ways?
I do.
Really?
I do. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think another NFL team would. Sure. Mm-hmm.
After this mess he's made.
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
I do. Yep. I mean, I don't want to venture a bet as to who it would be, but I think somebody would.
I think he's worn his welcome in the NFL out. He needs to, I think the only way he'll get another chance is if he goes back to college and builds another winner, personally. Then maybe somebody will give him another shot. I mean, between the player personnel moves and, you know, just the general, you know, seemingly lacking of any kind of plan, I just don't, you know, I don't see the NFL. I don't see this working long term in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, wherever he goes, it's fine with me so long as, you know, we move on from here. The unfortunate part about it, for at least me as a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles, is what happens to the Philadelphia Eagles and how long is it going to take to be able to rebound from this mess? Because it's not going to be something that we can fix or correct overnight. Chip Kelly might be gone, but I think the fan base can probably expect another at least a season or two or more of issues. Look, we don't have a quarterback. That's the bottom line. We do not have a quarterback. There's no franchise quarterback on this team. And there's multiple other problems that they're going to have to address. So we'll see how, we'll see where it goes from there. Let's do this. Let's jump over and take a look at, well, let's take a look at these Denver Broncos, because we've been talking about that team and the transition that they're kind of going through as well. And I guess I asked the question, are we seeing the beginning of that transition taking place right now? Rumor is that Peyton Manning may not play for the Denver Broncos for the remainder of this year, may never, and it's very possible, may never walk on the field as a Denver Bronco again. Brock Osweiler took over for him last week on the road against the Chicago Bears, and the Denver Broncos won that game by 2 points, 17-15. Osweiler was 20 of 27, 250 yards, two touchdowns, no interception, and 127.1 passer rating. As I predicted, we got a heavy dose of the run game, Brandon. 21 carries for Ronnie Hillman, 102 yards. My goodness, we hadn't seen that kind of production from Ronnie Hillman all season long. C.J. Anderson, 12 carries for 59 yards. That guy was a phantom. Everybody was talking about C.J. Anderson. What happened to C.J. Anderson? Well, he showed up again all of a sudden. Look at the guys that got involved in the passing game. Owen Daniels was your leading receiver. 4 receptions for 69 yards. Vernon Davis, 6 receptions, 68 yards. Cody Latimer? Yeah, uh-huh. He had a touchdown. Very, very interesting. Look that we saw from the Denver Broncos. It kind of went down exactly as I had predicted, in my mind, anyhow. I kind of said, I think we're going to see a bit more of what Gary Kubiak has wanted from this team all along, but felt somewhat handcuffed as a result of, okay, this is Peyton's last year. We'll leave it alone. I'll go along with it. Of course, now Peyton, it may not be his last year because Peyton comes out and says, oh, no, I intend on playing next year yet. Except,
well, it was leaked. It was leaked.
That was leaked?
That's what he says, yeah.
Oh,
see,
okay.
I think what we're doing here is setting the stage for the divorce, because now you got, you know, the Broncos making statements. You got Peyton Manning, you know, saying privately that he wants to play, but then when asked about it, doesn't admit it. And I read a story that potentially Peyton's camp leaked this only so that they could, you know, start making it set is an early negotiation ploy for next year, you know, because like he's actually under contract for Denver for $19 million next year. So, you know, they already restructured this year down from 20 to 16. I don't think the Broncos want to pay him 19 after his performance.
My goodness.
Something's going to give. And it may give before the end of the year, for all of we know. I don't see Peyton conducting himself in a manner where he gets himself cut, but you never know. I mean, we've seen stranger things in the NFL, for sure.
$19 million for next year. My goodness.
That's what he's on the books for, yep.
Well, with all due respect, I don't blame Denver for not wanting to pay that.
No.
I wouldn't want to pay it for what we've seen from Peyton Manning either.
The question is he worth even $6 or $8 million at this point in his career? I would say probably not. You know, not unless, you know, he finds a fountain of youth somewhere and, you know, can all of a sudden, you know, throw the ball again. Because he certainly doesn't, you know, even though it seemingly was a little better after the bye, he still wasn't lighting the world up like he used to. So
Let me ask you a question, though. But by Peyton's camp leaking information whereby Peyton's saying, well, you know, I want to play another year, even if it's for a different team, how does that help his case? How does that help Peyton's case? If I were the Broncos, I'd sit there and go, okay, fine, we'll make it easy for you. What can we do to help you get out of here? I mean, I don't see how that in any way benefits Peyton Manning if, in fact, he wants to somehow or another hang around with the Broncos and perhaps maybe try to cash in on maybe even a renegotiated amount for next year.
Well, here's what it's coming down to, and it's always the case with Peyton and other big-time guys. We saw Brett Favre trying to do it, you know, on his way out of Green Bay. He wants to be the good guy. Hey, yeah, I'm a team guy. I want to play next year. I'm looking forward to it, blah, blah, blah. I know full well the team doesn't want to pay me what my contract is. So, and I'm not so sure I want to be here with Kubiak and his system. So if I make it that, you know, it looks like I'm the good guy on the surface, I can set the stage for that by putting it out here saying, look, I'm ready to go. I want to play next year. I want to do this. I want to do that. And, you know, make the team be the bad guy and say, well, you know, it's not going to happen. And that's kind of what he's doing. I mean, you saw Favre did the same thing trying to get out of Green Bay. He pulled the retirement card and then unretired. And he did it again. So, I mean, you know, I think it's all PR at this point. Hmm. I don't think Peyton wants to be the bad guy. Because it does look like things are getting a bit messy in Denver.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, if he ever is deemed 100% healthy and they don't let him play, I think the Denver Broncos are going to face heat in the media because we kind of heard a little bit of it on the Countdown show this past week. You know, they were arguing on set. Well, who do you play? If Brock is better or do you play the, you know, potential Hall of Famer? And we heard them go back and forth.
It's no secret that I've been a drum beater for Peyton Manning since his arrival in Denver. That's no secret. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I've made it clear why I am the drum beater that I am for him. Why I've been a Peyton Manning fan for these past few years since his, being over there at Denver. With all due respect, any rational, clear-minded analyst that would sit there and say that the Denver Broncos are better off playing Peyton Manning based upon what we have seen from him this season is a downright fool. There's no way. Listen, I'm a Peyton Manning fan, and my attitude is, Peyton, do yourself a favor. Go out with grace. Go out with dignity and retire, my friend. Retire. Admit when it's over. You've got the most yardage now of any quarterback in the history of the NFL. Leave it alone. What more could you possibly accomplish? What, you want one more Super Bowl? It may not happen. More than likely, it's not going to. So leave it alone. It's over. I don't get it. I cannot hold. I could not personally hold the Denver Broncos in contempt for what they're doing right now. Absolutely not. They're doing the right thing. That's my personal opinion.
I agree with you. You know, Peyton, if he wants a Super Bowl, he might be smart to stay where he is. That defense, and if Brock can put together a, you know, couple good games, you never know. You know, he might have a chance this year in this league, the way this league is not, you know, it's, as you pointed out, mediocre. Yeah. I mean, all of a sudden the Bengals aren't looking as good. I mean, they played a really good game, though, against Arizona, who's a solid team this past week, and it came down to the last drive, for crying out loud. So, you know. I think it's just, you know, I don't know that the Broncos have enough to get it this year, but their defense is pretty good, that's for sure.
Well, I don't either. I mean, I don't either. I mean, particularly when you've got the question marks you do. I mean, look, obviously, they're 8-2. They're going to go to the playoffs. I think there's little doubt about that. They're going to go to the playoffs. Now, how far they're going to go in those playoffs, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows because, you know, the question's still out there as to whether Osweiler is, look, he did fine. He was serviceable against the Chicago Bears. They ran the ball a lot. They're going to play the New England Patriots this week. I just wanted to check real quick, see what the line is on that game. New England, as I pointed out, yeah, okay, I did know the line on this game. New England's only favored by 3 on this one in Denver. You know, so that's not an overwhelming endorsement of New England coming into Denver. So, you know, the Vegas folks are giving a little bit of respect to the Broncos. But as you point out, they're probably giving the respect to the Broncos' defense. Maybe not so much the offense. I don't know. What did you take away from Osweiler's play the other day? What did you think of it overall?
For his first start, not bad. I mean, I think he played pretty well. They won the game. He didn't look bad. I think they had a better balanced attack. He took a lot more snaps under center. So, you know, it wasn't so predictable, let's just say. When he did need to throw, he could make throws. So I give him a lot of credit. He did a good job. You know, he's only going to get better. That's the other thing. I mean, if he's going to actually get a chance to play now as a starter, you know, maybe he gets the next 2-3 games while, you know, we may not see Peyton back at all. It just, you know, it just depends how Brock plays. If Brock plays bad or gets hurt, then maybe we'll see Peyton, but otherwise we may not.
Yeah, and that's all going to depend on whether, in fact, that injury is something he can come back from. Because
I've ever read on that's a 6-week injury. So, yeah, I don't know why people are talking about that. He could be playing now. I'm like,
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so either.
Not effectively. I mean, because clearly, you know, it affected him in the first half of that game, you know, that the last one he played. He looked horrible in that game.
Yep.
Absolutely horrible. Hence, why he was pulled and Brock was put in.
Five of 20 for 35 yards or something ridiculous.
And 4 interceptions, which you'll never forget as a fantasy owner.
Never, ever, ever. Yeah, minus seven points from Peyton Manning. All right. Well, it's interesting. I guess we're going to wait and see what happens that's the late game on Sunday, is it not?
Yes, that's the Sunday night football game. That's the last one of a pretty full card of football for the weekend. We got Thursday all day, and
well, you got Monday.
And we got that's right. Well, there's a Monday
night game. But that's Cleveland, Baltimore, and you know you might
nobody
you might,
cares.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might have been right to just forget about that one.
Who knows who's going to even be in quarterback in that game? You got Matt Schaub and Baltimore.
It's going to be Josh McCown. Josh McCown.
Oh, is it?
It's already been announced.
Oh, okay.
Johnny Manziel has been relegated to the third string quarterback.
Wow.
After video was released of him partying while he was supposed to be in rehab. Actually, he was partying recently during the bye week. Bye week. Did you see the video?
I did not see the video, but I read about it.
It was pretty disgraceful. It was pretty disgraceful. He was pretty well trashed. This kid I don't know what else to say. I guess maybe we could make one more statement about Johnny Football, and then we'll call it a day right there. You know, we'll just put up the little memorial to him if there is a memorial that's needed for him. Because, frankly, I think this kid is just, he's not going to learn, Brandon.
No.
He's one of these sad, sad stories that we have heard many, many times of privileged kids who just never appreciated what they were and what they had available to them. I mean, I hate to stereotype it that way, but that's exactly how it comes about being portrayed with Johnny Manziel, doesn't it?
Yep. Well, you nailed it right on the head. He just doesn't learn, and he's not going to learn. I don't know if anything's going to ever make it get through his head, but, you know, right now, no. He's done. I don't think anybody else is even going to give him a chance. I mean, why even bother? Is there any upside? Is there enough of an upside to even make it worthwhile?
There is talk right now that, in fact, the Browns may actually turn their back completely and cut him.
Yep. I read the same thing.
The report from Mike Patton, and, you know, Manziel's such an idiot because this guy Patton is so petulant to begin with, can never seem to make up his mind which way he wants to go, went and forced the guy to go and have to make a decision he doesn't want to make again. Because I think this is about the sixth time this year that Patton's had to make a decision about the quarterback again. But in making his statement that, in fact, Manziel has now been relegated to the third string, you could actually hear in his tone that he was disappointed and a bit disgusted by the whole thing. When he indicated that, you know, that he was gravely, gravely disappointed, that he felt very bad about the whole thing because, in fact, he felt that Manziel was making progress, but that, in fact, they couldn't continue in this direction. That really sounds like a team that's about ready to up and turn their backs on him completely, doesn't it?
Yep, it certainly does. And the fact that they take him from, you know, last week he was the starter for the rest of the year to, well, now you're the third string quarterback, that's only one step away from the door, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So that door may be, you know, they look at who's out there and who can be the new third quarterback, and they see someone they like, and that's going to be it for Mr. Johnny. Johnny Football can, try to find a new home, as they say.
This is an interesting situation, too, because I remember when they drafted him, I guess it was, two seasons ago now. All the reports were, Brandon, that and Mike Patton was just coming in, I believe, at that time, wasn't he? Patton's only in his second year, I believe.
I think Patton inherited him, actually.
Well, wasn't he really Jimmy Haslam's choice? Because
yes.
the owner was real high on him.
Correct.
And, of course, that was Banner, I think, was the GM there at the time.
I don't know about that.
Was
I
Banner,
think that might have been post-Banner.
Was it post-Banner? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was right around the time when, you know, all that kind of imploded
okay.
the first time.
But I know for a fact that Jimmy Haslam was real high on Johnny Manziel.
Yes.
And, of course, we all know the stories that, well, you know, Jerry down there in Dallas was real high on him, too. And it was his son that had to go and pull the card from him so that Jerry didn't go and draft him. But Haslam ended up going with him. Interesting if, in fact, they really do turn their back on him and how that situation differs so tremendously from the situation down in Washington where you got the owner, Dan Snyder, who has consistently been in the corner of RG3 and for the longest time couldn't, Gruden and Mike Shanahan couldn't get anything, you know, couldn't get any, they couldn't get their mind heard, their voice heard on RG3 because Dan Snyder is constantly saying, oh, no, no, I got to have my boy in there. I got to have my boy in there. Very interesting dichotomy of the way things go. If, in fact, it does turn out that Manziel were to end up getting cut. Now, with the dearth of quarterbacks, though, and you know, you bring up the question, you brought it up to me about, you know, do I think that any NFL team would pick up or be interested in Chip Kelly? With the dearth of quarterbacks in this league, do you think anybody would dare go near Johnny Manziel?
I don't think, not
what
without
about
Johnny.
What about Jerry?
I don't think so. Not with his supposed, you know, I went through rehab and then you get stories like this. I think there's just too much public problems that he's just waiting to be, you know, they had the traffic stop thing with his girlfriend that could have become a domestic violence issue. And, you know, there's just too many red flags, I think, right now in Johnny Football. So I would think teams would tend to stay away from him. There's too much potential issues for the little upside you have, you know, the little shot that he's going to make it. Cause he hasn't really shown that, you know, he's far from a franchise quarterback.
I agree.
You know what I mean? We already seen that much. We already know that. Whether or not he's a long-term project and can be serviceable, maybe, but is it worth it? I think right now, no, not unless he would straighten himself out a little bit.
It would be one thing if this kid was lights out and had all
yes.
these problems.
That
you
would
know,
be different,
kid,
and we'd have another Greg Hardy on our hands.
If this kid was lights out and had all these repeated issues and problems, you know, then a lot of us would be sitting back going, oh, man alive, what a stupid moron.
Yep.
Well, we're sitting back and saying, what a stupid moron. But anybody, like I've said before here, anybody that has any ounce of you know, knowledge about football, all you have to do is just watch a little bit of Johnny Manziel to know he's not going to be He's nowhere near, as you just pointed out, a franchise quarterback. I mean, it's just ridiculous to even consider
it. He's not big enough.
No, he's not.
Drew Brees gets away with it because Drew Brees has a lot of talent. But for the most part, when you see a quarterback of this size and stature, they just don't have the basic tools required. You know, that's where Johnny's starts and finishes in my book. You know, he's the same size as Brees, but he doesn't have half the talent Brees has.
Yeah, he's got mobility. He can run.
Yeah.
You know.
That only lasts so long. Look at RG3. You know, you get too many injuries and you're, you know, can't be as good. So, yeah, I just don't see the upside. I don't see any, you know, even Jerry Jones, I don't think is reaching out to Johnny Football if he gets cut.
You know, Manziel, I could have almost seen being like my guy from Michigan a couple of years ago. What's his name? Robinson, right? Down there in
yeah.
Jacksonville. Who played quarterback, obviously, for Michigan. But if you recall, even at that time, before the draft, I said, listen, Robinson should not be drafted as a quarterback. You draft Robinson as a running back. That's what you do. Or maybe a slot receiver. That's what you draft him as. And you try to put him in that position. You don't put him in as a quarterback because he's not a quarterback. Manziel, I could see almost being able to be a running back, not a quarterback. If you use him in that kind of a role, you might have something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that would fly. I don't know what kind of hands he has, like, because he'd have to be like a Danny Woodhead kind of back, not an every down back, because you don't have the size. You know, he'd probably have to be a third down back, you know, and for that you need to be able to catch. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't
you
know if he has the skill set. He has the legs. I'll give you that.
I mean, you start talking about size. I mean, Darren Sproles has got no size.
No. Darren Sproles a little bit faster and quicker, I think, than Johnny Football is even.
I would agree.
I don't think I think you have a different skill set there entirely. I'd be quicker to compare him to Woodhead because he's probably about the same stature and size and speed. You know, he might actually even be a little bigger than Danny Woodhead. He's a little dude, too, so. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how you squeeze him in that situation. I don't see him down, grinded out running back. I don't think he has that kind of – I don't think that would work out too well.
Just a thought. That's the thought. I just kind of get the impression that if, in fact, they were to cut and run from him, I think somebody somewhere would probably take a flyer on him in some position. I don't know where or what, but I think somebody would. Anyhow, how about these Indianapolis Colts? Last week, the Indianapolis Colts beat the Atlanta Falcons 24-21. Colts take the record to 5-5, and that is the best record and leads their division there in the AFC South. The Indianapolis Colts are 5-5. Houston Texans 5-5. Jacksonville's 4-6. Look at there, Jacksonville's got a fighting chance to take over the AFC South. Tennessee 2-8. So everybody's in contention over there. Indianapolis Colts, question I throw out there, Brandon, are they contention worthy? If in fact we're going to be running with Matt Hasselbeck for any length of time, he was 23 of 32, 213 yards. 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions the other day. They continue to throw the ball, surprisingly somewhat effectively, against the Atlanta Falcons, there's a question I got. What in the world happened to the Atlanta Falcons who started out the season going gangbusters? Everybody thought, oh, my God, the Atlanta Falcons are back. Boy, they have really cooled off recently. They passed the ball rather effectively against the Falcons' defense. But in my opinion, the Colts still have that big, big problem, and that's their ground game. Frank Gore, a mere 34 yards on 14 carries. Ahmad Bradshaw, 32 yards, 9 carries. There's no ground game to this Colts team. It is a matter of time before we're looking at the Colts in third position in the South. That's my prediction. What do you say?
I disagree with you. I think the Colts probably still have the best overall team in that division. The Texans, they don't look like, to me, they have the staying power. Hasselbeck's actually serviceable as a backup. I played games earlier this year filling in for Luck, and he found a way to beat the Falcons. I mean, I'm not. I think this is their division to lose. And I the Texans have the revolving door quarterback. I did read that Hoyer has been cleared in the concussion protocol, so he'll probably be back. Whether or not, they make a run or not, I don't know. I still think the Colts probably are the best team in the South, and, they're in first place now. I think Luck will be back. I think Hasselbeck is he's okay. I think he has the tools to do what they need him to do. So we'll just have to wait. That's just my opinion. Jacksonville, I think, is a year away yet. And Tennessee's they're a mess. They already fired their coach, so, they're already trying somebody new out. I just don't see that. I think the Colts still will pull out the South, and they'll be 1-1. They ain't going to beat anybody else unless they get a really good draw on a bad wild card team. But, there's other teams out there that, are – turning the corner, like, I'll just bring Kansas City Chiefs up. I think all of a sudden they look like they're, turning the corner and may end up being a wild card position for the, AFC. So I think things are, I just don't see it slipping away from the Colts, to be honest with you. I don't think the Texans are all that.
Excuse me. What's the word that you read on, Andrew Luck as it stands right now?
I haven't heard anything from a timeline on his return, so I really don't know. I think we had heard originally that it was going to be at least, 3-4 weeks from the, what we heard the first time when the injury happened. So, I think a lot of it's going to depend on Hasselbeck. If he can stay healthy and is playing well, I don't think they're going to rush Luck. You know, if he can win two out of three games that he plays, I think they'd be okay with Hasselbeck like that, you know. And he already won one. I mean, he won this game against a team that's, you know, got a better record, especially going into the game they did. They'll have a better record than the Colts do, even after losing to them. So, I don't know. And it was in Atlanta. It wasn't like it was, you know, at home or anything. And they mm-hmm. still, Hasselbeck still did enough to win the game. So,
right.
I think the Colts will be okay with him, and they ain't going to rush Luck back till. Clark, I think it's a different story than like Peyton Manning in Denver. I think Luck's ready. He's back. I don't think that, you know, there's any thought of keeping him in the sidelines any longer than they have to.
Well,
but
sure.
I don't think they're going to risk his long-term health by, you know, pushing him back quicker than need be, let's just say.
Indianapolis is home this week. They've got Tampa Bay coming in. Tampa Bay is coming in there. Indianapolis is a 3-point favorite with Hasselbeck under center. I guess the only reason I pose the question is because, you know, how long do you anticipate, or do you think, I mean, you know, if you're a general manager, if you're a coach, whatever, can you think you're going to be able to run a division-leading team with a 40-plus-year-old quarterback in Matt Hasselbeck? Now, I'm looking through the depth chart, and I was just reminded, of course, that they just acquired, Charlie Whitehurst, who is the next one up. Next man up if, in fact, Hasselbeck were to go down and Andrew Luck were not ready to return. I hear you. This is not the same situation as Denver. You're absolutely right. I mean, if Andrew Luck's ready to come back, they're going to bring him back in. How long are you going to go? Interesting. Interesting situation. The AFC South, despite its mediocrity, is an intriguing one and to kind of speculate upon. A little bit disappointing because, I mean, for gosh sakes, I mean, so many of us thought that the Indianapolis Colts they had taken so many good steps, so many seasons in a row, that you kind of thought, okay, the Colts are going to, this is going to be a year where the Colts are really going to, you know, step it up a notch. That's what you kind of thought. But everybody could see, right, almost from week one, it was a team that had gotten older, that had aged, and they had not addressed the ground game in the offseason. You got to wonder what the thinking was there. I don't know. More and more, though, I guess the word is...
Well, I think they're
going to be looking at coaching changes, I guess, for the offseason. I think that's probably the next step, right?
I think you're right there. I think Pagano, and I think Pagano's a good coach, but I think there was a power struggle at the beginning of the year between the GM Gregson and he lost, and I think that was basically the right at that point. I don't think there's much reason to think that relationship's going to continue. I do think Pagano, though, has done a good job, deserves
so
another shot in the NFL, and I think he'll get it. He might have to spend a year as an OC somewhere to get, you know, his feet wet again. You never know. He may go from one to another, though. It just depends.
Yep.
I think he's done a very good job, you know, with that team. Just Jim Irsay, we all know Jim Irsay is a little bit crazy. And I don't know why he has so much faith in
Gregson.
Gregson, because I think depending who he goes with, he might end up cleaning house totally anyway.
Yeah.
So he might have made the wrong call, and it's kind of too late to back out of it. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I think Pagano will land on his feet one way or the other. It's a shame because I thought they actually had a chance, I thought, this year.
I
think it just didn't work out with Gore and Andre Johnson. I think, you know, they were just 1 year past where they needed them two to be to, you know, plug them into the last keys to a Super Bowl run, unfortunately.
All right, we got a couple of minutes here. I wanted to just touch on this one game here real quick, Brandon, in about 2.5, maybe 3 minutes or so. Green Bay Packers, we all had said it, well, many of us did anyhow the other day, Thursday night last week on our Frat House Sports Show. Green Bay wasn't going to lose four in a row, and they didn't. Green Bay beat the Minnesota Vikings 30-13, and now have taken over, despite the fact there's a tie at the top of the NFC North. Despite the fact there's a tie there, they now are technically in on top of the Minnesota Vikings. But I got to ask this question, Brandon. Aaron Rodgers the other day was 16-34 for 212 yards. Yes, he had two touchdowns. But, Brandon, those numbers are not terrific. 16-34. That's like 47% completion rate. Those are not great numbers. And you got to wonder, many have been speculating that, in fact, Aaron Rodgers may be a little bit banged up. There may be some problems there. That may be why they went on their skid to begin with. What are you reading on that one? Anything to it?
I did read that he was fighting through some injuries. But here's the other thing you got to look at with Green Bay. They lost Jordy Nelson earlier in the year. And I think Jordy Nelson being away has hurt Randall Cobb, and it's kind of trickled down that they don't have the elite set of receivers they thought they were going to have. So, you know, and Aaron is trying to do more. I think he's trying to do some more. We've seen him run a couple times. I mean, even in this game, he had one rush, three, but I think I know he ran at least once, so he probably had some, maybe some other plays there where he lost a little bit of yards too, because I remember one where he did run for a first down. And, you know, maybe that's contributing to potential injuries. I don't think he has anything that would be bad enough to keep him out of a game-wise injury, but banged up nonetheless, maybe a little more so than, you know, than just a little, but I think he's going to play through it.
Okay.
You know, he's come out and kind of said that, hey, everybody gets hurt at this point of the year in the NFL.
Well,
and
that's true.
I'm playing through it. It's a point of pride, period. End
right.
of statement. And I think that was more so to try to keep the team from getting in, you know, some hot water with the NFL for not reporting if he did indeed have an injury or what. But, you know, you got to give the guy credit. And as you said, we all said, we didn't expect them to lose three in a row, and they didn't. So
right, exactly. One thing I will point out real quick, for all the talk on Eddie Lacy, my goodness, 22 carries, 100 yards. So
yeah,
all of a sudden,
Starks is missing in action again.
For all those folks that didn't play Eddie Lacy, just when you think, anyhow. All right, there you go. That's our program for this evening. Hey, I'll tell you what, you're going to want to be here tomorrow night for our special edition, our Thanksgiving edition of the Frat House Show. That'll be our 220th program coming to you straight through. 220th, holy smokes. Frat House Sports Show right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can bet that there will be a lot of NFL chat on tomorrow night's agenda. You can bet. I already know that there will be a little bit of NBA talk and obviously some NHL chat with our good buddy Matt DeBias as well as our picks of the week, of two of which I believe are Thursday Turkey Day games. So you're going to want to make sure that you're here for those. Many thanks to all of you that have been out there listening in this evening. Well, listen, one more thing you got to do. I don't know. Get out there and, I don't know, enjoy some sports of some nature. Go find something.
You find out.